Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, which means, as usual, it's time for the other podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McGain.
And I'm the other guy on the other podcast. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue here, and we have lurking out there in the internet, but apparently connected to us, the lady from the podcast. Hi, Diana.
Hello, John. Hello, Stacy.
Well,
and
how
roll tide.
What?
And roll tide.
Yeah, yeah. How are things down there in Valdosta?
Beautiful, bright, cold, windy. Ended up at a cigar bar this afternoon, which may explain if I'm a little sleepy. Talking to people, and a guy was saying, hey, did you know that Alabama promises that Alabama has been able to show recruits that if they come on board, they, if you've been there 3 years, you will have won a national championship.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much
the
case.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, Stacy blogs at theothermccain.com, and he has a post called, Can I Get a Roll Tide, Please?
Yes. There was a lot of Roll Tide on Monday night here. It was a beautiful thing. Now, I have to explain that my wife is from Ohio, and her family are Buckeyes fans. There was some muting of the Roll Tide, really. This is only the fifth time that Alabama ever played Ohio State. And Alabama has won all but one of those, which was a 2015 semifinal playoff. Alabama defeated Ohio State 52-24 for its third national championship in the college football playoff era. And that's what you were talking about, Diana, that we have won three national championships since 2010.
Stacy, like you said, it's Roll Tide, and they are on a roll. They may even beat Vanderbilt this fall.
Yeah. Well, anyways, but the
do you know what it would be like if Vanderbilt ever beat Bama?
No, I don't. And I hope that I will never know.
Cats and dogs living together.
Well, we do it at
basketball.
We do it at basketball.
John is an alumnus of the, I want to say the Ivy League of the SEC.
Actually, yes. Vanderbilt is considered the Harvard of the South by the Ivy League. But actually, Harvard is the Vanderbilt of the North.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, anyways, and so there are a great many good things about Vanderbilt. Their football team is not one of them.
No. Baseball, though, we rule.
Okay, well, anyways, okay.
But what we do.
This is the 18th national title in Alabama University of Alabama football hero. Let's see. We beat Clemson in 2015, 45-40. And then beat Georgia in the final 26-23. What year did we beat Georgia for the title? I'm trying to remember. Well, anyways.
You beat Georgia. That's okay.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
Yes, but you know what? You joke about Vanderbilt, but you have to say at least we're honest about our record. We haven't. There's nothing fraudulent about Vanderbilt.
Record.
I can honestly.
They haven't had mail-in football scores.
No, but meanwhile in Texas, I did a post about this called, but I was told there was no fraud. The Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, announced this week that a lady by the name of Rachel Rodriguez had been arrested for election fraud, illegal voting, and unlawfully insisting people in voting by mail, and unlawfully possessing an official ballot. Each one of those is a felony in Texas. So she was caught on video by Project Veritas engaging in ballot harvesting, which caught the law enforcement's eye in Texas. And by the way, that story broke on the 13th. Yeah, and I haven't seen anything about it.
Of course not.
On any of the mainstream media. So,
yes.
Meanwhile, though, in room 101,
it's so difficult to become sane.
You're a slow learner, said O'Brien gently. How can I help it? He blubbered. How can I help seeing what's in front of my eyes? Two and two are four. Sometimes, Winston. Sometimes they are four. Sometimes they are three. Sometimes they are five. Sometimes they're 81,281,502. You must try harder. It isn't easy to become sane. Meanwhile, there are people who had sanity trouble in dealing with the result of the election, and they showed up in D.C. on the 6th, didn't they, Stacey?
Yes.
And meanwhile, we're back with Georgia again, and
Georgia bank executive commits suicide after being charged in Capitol riot. at one blog, the other McCain. What?
But
Diana,
as far I was reading your story, and I was having a little bit of a problem here. Why was he was he charged in the riots for real? Or was he one of those people?
Christopher Stanton, Georgia. His last name is Georgia. 53 was a regional portfolio manager at BB&T, it's a bank, who lived in a fine home in the Atlanta suburb of Alpharetta. He was a cum laude graduate of Georgia State University. After he was charged in connection with last week's riot at the Capitol in D.C., leftists began barraging his employer's Twitter account with demands that he be fired. Saturday, and that's a week ago, he died from a self-inflicted gunshot. Now I read to you from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. An Alpharetta man who was among those arrested following the insurrection.
We have to stop allowing them to dictate this. Go ahead.
Well, he's quoting.
At the U.S. Capitol Wednesday, has killed himself, according to the Fulton County Medical Examiner's Office. Christopher Georgia, 53, died Saturday from a gunshot wound to his chest, said an investigator for the office. Georgia's body was found in the basement of a home in a subdivision near Briarfield and Mid-Broadwell Roads, Alpharetta police records show. Police found two rifles at the home. Metropolitan Police in Washington, D.C., arrested Georgia Wednesday evening and charged him with, quote, unlawful entry of public property, end quote, and violating the city's 6 p.m. curfew.
Both misdemeanors.
In connection with last week's storming of the Capitol by President Trump's borders. Georgia pleaded not guilty Thursday, and that would be the 7th. D.C. Superior Court records show, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported his involvement in Friday's edition, that's January 8th. His attorney, Marnetta King, declined to comment. His family did not respond to requests for comment. More details, and this comes from the site, the Daily Mail, the UK Daily Mail. Documents obtained exclusively by DailyMail.com show George's wife called 911 on Saturday morning, telling authorities there was blood everywhere. His body was found in the basement of a home they share. Family members on the scene have described police as extremely distressed, were described by police as extremely distressed, as I can imagine. Anyways, what happened was at around 7 p.m. last Wednesday on the night of the riots, Georgia was reportedly among a group outside in violation of the district's 6 p.m. curfew that had been put in place earlier that day to stem the chaos wreaked by the pro-Trump mob, when officers gave the group several warnings to disperse. Georgia and his group reportedly refused, according to the documents. So, and I point this out, nobody, so far as we know, has accused Christopher Georgia of doing anything violent. He was part of a group that failed to disperse in violation of the DC curfew order. What has happened is that everybody charged last Wednesday has been targeted for destruction by the left. As Kirk Schlichter keeps saying, they want us all dead.
Yes, yes, I've begun to believe him. Actually, no. I believed him a long time ago. I've gotten to the point where, you know, I'm sick at heart about all of this, but I've been watching my Democrat friends on social media, and we'll get to that later in the show. But yeah, what happened, this guy's suicide belongs to the left. This was the next thing to murder. I don't know how stupid you are to be told. I don't know how annoyed you are, how upset you are, how you feel you're being oppressed, that you don't, when the cops come to you and say, hey, you guys, you can't hang here, you got to go away, you say, I'm sorry, but I'm talking to my friends, or I'm waiting for something, or blah, blah, blah. How come you don't just go, thank you, officer, and go away? I just don't know. Because this exact instant, knowing what's going to happen, you got to pick your battles. And last Wednesday was not the day to do that.
There are a bunch of people who are very wise and to stay away. And there are a bunch of people who are very brave, but very unwise to go.
Well, I wanted to go. I couldn't afford it. That's the way it is.
Well, I will say this, is that in August of 2017, a friend called me up and says, hey, are you going to this thing in Charlottesville? And I was like, well, you know, I might like to go, but, you know, I got better things to do. I'm probably going to skip it. Lord.
Now, glad you did.
Glad
you did, huh?
Yeah, and then that was the Charlottesville riot, and we had friends involved in the organizing of this rally that was held at which President Trump spoke. We had friends. I could have gone, but you know, I'm
what?
Not.
I had friends passing through the town I live on the way to D.C. They wanted to know if I wanted to ride down. No.
Yeah, and
well,
anyways.
They're all a little old for that kind of nonsense.
Well, that was the easy excuse for me, right? Is no,
well,
I'm a
I
little.
I couldn't afford it. Well, I that's a gone.
That, yeah, and you probably would have been one of those nice people on the other end of the mall, you know. Being polite about it. The thing is that the narrative about what's going on or what
is
went
escalating.
On But it's also falling apart. The Federalist had it published an eyewitness account by a fellow by the name of J. Michael Waller. Mm-hmm. And he literally wrote his notes down that evening and the next morning before he'd seen any coverage. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, and so, you know, there's things where this is what I saw. And maybe if it, you know, it contradicts what somebody else is reporting. But one of the things that he writes in this is that a small number of cadre appeared to use the cover of a huge rally to stage the attack. Mm-hmm. But before it began, I saw from my vantage point on the west front of the Capitol what appeared to be four separate cells or units. One was, mm-hmm. he describes as plainclothes militants, mm-hmm. People dressed like Trump supporters or with MAGA hats, mm-hmm. but who just didn't fit in. Agents provocateurs, scattered groups of men exhorting the marchers to gather closely and move forward, and not
letting them leave.
Right. We'll get to that in a bit. And fake Trump protesters, you know, guys with their MAGA hats on backwards, and or wearing Trump gear, and it, you know, and just being real uncomfortable and not fitting in at all. And then a disciplined bunch of people, he described them as disciplined uniform columns of attackers, people all dressed more or less alike who were moving together and who appeared to, you know, have a plan of action. And, you know, people ought to go to Federalist and read his thing. An easy way to get there is to go to hogwash.com and go to my post called An Eyewitness Account, and there's a link there. You can get you over to the Federalist. That will do. And that report then is consistent with a story that broke on the 15th. Actually, it broke late on the 14th. And I titled my report of that, Insurrectionist Arrested. The FBI reported that it had arrested someone named John Sullivan, who mm-hmm. is a black guy from Utah, who basically was there. Well, according to the probable cause warrant that the FBI submitted, Sullivan is the leader of an organization called Insurgents USA. And when I checked on that organization, they appear to be loosely affiliated with Black Lives Matter, although BLM is now saying, not us.
Yeah, right. They can say that as much as they like. They accepted a lot of affiliations during the summer and fall that they are currently violently trying to disavow.
Yeah, but anyway, the affidavit.
Violent?
No, they're mostly peaceful.
Okay, rhetorically.
Anyway, the affidavit that the FBI filed states that Sullivan admitted to wearing a ballistic vest and carrying a gas mask while he was at the riot. And he was among the people. He's the person that filmed Ashley Babbitt being shot. And he has been interviewed by outlets like Rolling Stone about that. But it basically, what the FBI did was take the video that this guy published on YouTube and went like, hello, and went out and interviewed him and then busted him. And by the way, the affidavit does not allege any connection between Sullivan's actions and the president's speech. Mm-hmm. A couple of other things that are interesting. The case is sealed on the case as it's filed in D.C. is sealed on PACER. Although the FBI and the Department of Justice published the warrant application, and I have that at Hogwash. You need to read that to see mm-hmm. what the FBI has deduced from this guy's own videos and interviews. And a judge in Utah just turned the guy loose without bail.
Why?
So that's what's going on. You know, and this whole thing, it looks like that it wasn't MAGA people, it was more or less Democrat-related people actually causing the problem. Well, there's severe indications of that.
Here's the thing, is that, you know, every time, you know, there's a mass shooting, a bombing, some sort of terrorist type of incident, right? You know, everybody, you know, runs out to go, you know, it was their side that did it, pointing the finger the other way. And I read the biographies and, you know, thumbnails of dozens of the people arrested who seemed to be genuine Trump supporters. Crazy as hell.
But Alex Jones fans, a lot of them.
Yeah, that's and I talked about this last week, is that if you pay attention, it seems to have been a lot of Alex Jones fans. But I'm right now, the investigation into what happened, okay, is in the early stages. And I have talked to people who will tell you that fake credentials were involved. People were wearing credentials, okay, identifying themselves with the rally, okay, and who got in, and once the barricade had been stormed, right, they were telling people who were on the like the balconies and the steps, saying, "Oh no, you've got the right to be here." Okay, this is all on video, and it's being investigated not only by the FBI and the Capitol Police and what all, but it's being investigated independently by people on our side who are concerned that what it was there were agents provocateurs involved. Okay, according to my
they're probably
okay. And there were like Reddit threads and stuff. You remember the FBI actually issued a warning.
If you read the arrest, the application for the arrest warrant, it's clear that Sullivan was essentially acting as one.
Yeah, but he wasn't one of.
But
the
I mean, that's
ones.
But when people say there weren't any, well, the FBI just alleged in an arrest warrant that there was.
Yeah, well, it's
so, you know, game over before they were there.
He has been described to me as low-hanging fruit, okay? Mm-hmm. That
yeah, but the point is that you can't say there weren't any because they caught one.
Yes.
Well, can I say one thing? Can I break in very briefly on this?
Go
My
ahead.
Concern at this point has stopped being who broke into the Capitol. They'll all be arrested, they'll be charged, we'll sift that through. My issue is the escalating rhetoric from the mainstream media that there was a plot now to, which is being repeated all over social media, that there was a plot to capture and assassinate members of Congress, which is, you know, I'm really sorry, but that's obviously not true. You know how you can tell?
No weapons were brought.
One shot fired. No, there was only one shot fired. And that was the shot by the Capitol policeman that killed Ashley Babbitt.
And I can tell you right now,
we'll sort through that. We'll sort through that later. Whatever, how justified that was, I have my doubts. But the thing is, I'm hearing this escalating rhetoric that's ginning up a pogrom against Republicans, just general Republicans. They're not even trying to differentiate. This person who was just a Trump voter versus this person who is supposedly a white supremacist. This is being ginned up against all of us. And
the thing is that none of this that they're trying to sell passes any kind of reasonable sniff test. if people were there coming to assassinate, do you think they might have been armed?
Yeah, and they weren't.
Well, if someone, if somebody was armed with the intention of assassinating public officials and they were fired on by a policeman, do you think they'd shoot back?
They would.
Okay. And how many rounds were fired?
One.
Okay. What does this lead us? Where does this suggest we go in following this thing, right? Okay.
Except logic isn't in this anywhere. Every article I read is calling this an insurrection, an attempt to overthrow the U.S. government. I mean, it's everywhere. Every story I read about this. If you're not getting kind of worried and starting to look around you, what are we supposed to make of this? The rhetoric is just escalating so fast.
I can tell you one thing. I have a friend. It's a guy, an engineer I hired when I was working for a defense contractor. Mm-hmm. And his resume came in, and he had been working in the area with a lot of experience that we needed from. And we were working on an Air Force contract, and he was an Air Force veteran who had worked mm-hmm. in the part of the Air Force that we were working with. And he had the right kind of educational experience and, you know, industrial experience we were looking for. And everybody was surprised when he showed up that he was black. And I said, well, why are you surprised? It says right here on his resume, he graduated in 1965 from Tuskegee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he graduated from Tuskegee and joined and took Air Force ROTC. My, what a mm-hmm. Interesting sort of thing. Anyway, he and I used to talk a lot about our different experiences growing up in the South, more or less about the same time. He's like 4 years older than me. And one of the things he would tell stories about is how his father would make use of a Browning shotgun to protect the family from time mm-hmm. to time neighbors who weren't always peaceful. And, you know, my friend just said recently, he's noticed a tactical change in the street thugs who support the Democrats. Mm. And he says it's pretty significant. They figured out that black is a better color to be wearing at night than white.
Oh, God.
And he says otherwise he can't see a damn bit of difference in their character. And that's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with. And we're dealing then with a group of people who are excusing what amounts to Knight Riders in Portland and mm-hmm. Seattle. And then saying, and you people are doing the same thing and are doing it even worse. And there is a technical term for that kind of activity in engineering. We call it bullshit. But you know, you're right, Diana. They're trying to change not only just the narrative, but the ability to they're trying to take away our ability to have a counter narrative. And that's one of the reasons why folks need to be supporting their local blogger. This stuff with social media that was a trap. And back when we were independent bloggers only, we did a lot better. And you should support your local blogger, especially bloggers with yellow buttons.
That's right, folks. If you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice near the top of the center column a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click that button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute, support the blog, and also to support the podcast coming at you 52 weeks a year.
And will we try? Occasionally we have to take a week off.
Yeah, we have had technical things.
Or we occasionally, that sort of stuff.
Okay, but anyways,
family business.
We appreciate your support. And meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, hoguewash.com.
You can look in the sidebar over there on the right. Right at the top of the sidebar is an icon of a tip jar. Click on that. You'll be taken off to PayPal, where you can donate to support Hoguewash or the other podcast. The funds flow both ways. And you can scroll down further in the sidebar, click on the icon of a hat, and it will take you off to the Hoguewash store, where you can buy all sorts of things. Let's just call them things that are branded in ways related to the blog. That helps support the blog. Also, you'll find links to Amazon shopping at all sorts of blogs around the internet. And when you click on one of those links, if the blogger is a member of the Amazon affiliates, we are at both the other McCain and Hoguewash, the blog gets a commission on the sale. You pay the same price, the blogger gets some support, and everybody's happy. So there are all sorts of ways to support us, but the primary way is that yellow button, which brings us to the five most important words in the English language.
Which are hit the freaking tip jar.
Yep. Now, I should point out that every once in a while, it's pretty rarely that it happens, but Diana, for example, did a guest post a few weeks ago at Hoguewash. And, you know, Stacy at the other McCain has his blogging partner, Smitty, who is an occasional poster. And he also has his tech support, soldier. Wombat Sacco. And Wombat had a very thought-provoking post.
Yes, Wombat is a gigantic man. I mean, he is like 6 foot. I don't know.
He's got to be at least 6'3".
Yeah, he's about the size of your average defensive end in the NFL. So I mean, he's a very large guy.
You notice him when he comes in the room.
I met him, strangely enough, I was on my way to a dinner with several Tea Party activists and people like that in D.C., and he showed up, and we hung out, you know, and that's how he ended up as a co-blogger who does yeoman's work there. He had a post this week called Night of the Digital Long Knives, talking about how President Trump, Attorney Lynn Wood, Attorney Sidney Powell, and General Michael Flynn were all banned from Facebook, Twitter, simultaneously. This all happened at once. At the same time, Apple and Google and Amazon got rid of Parler, which had set itself up as an alternative to Twitter. So
it's French. It's Parlay.
Yeah. Well, anyways, yes. Well, anyways, but the site Parler.com has been Parler with an E, and you're right, that is pronounced Parlay in French. But anyways, it has been shut down, and they're trying to get back up. But my friend Wombat says, after the Antifa BLM riots of this past summer, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Cuban-style divine mobs used to destroy server farms belonging to companies hosting websites deemed guilty of sedition, incitement, or whatever excuse people like Maxine Waters want to use. And he lays reference he cites and links to Daniel Greenfield, I believe that's going to be, yeah, Front Page Magazine, how they have hoovered up these, you know, a handful of large companies have gained monopoly control. And, he says, people used to accuse Vox Day of being paranoid when he said these things a few years ago. What's keeping me awake nights is that Vox might not have been paranoid enough. Yeah.
I'm backed up offshore, and I'm not even going to tell you what country the servers are in.
Yeah, well, that Vox Day Vox Day started out, and by the way, I just want to just throw this out there since I'm pretty far into this, is to say that when I first became aware of Vox Day, he was a columnist, a syndicated columnist, who was writing from a pro-life Christian conservative viewpoint. Nowadays, and really for the past, 5 years or so, Vox is considered alt-right. And I think that's just because I don't think he has changed his opinion that much, but he shifted his focus of the issues that he is talking about. I don't know how long he's been around, but the thing is that like so many other people, right, is that if you merely stand your ground, if you merely stay where you are, right, you will become an extremist, quote unquote, over the course of time, simply because the left keeps moving. Okay, it's a continual march toward utopia over there, and so opinions that were commonplace and cited by the Supreme Court in decisions just 15 or 20 years ago are now, that's hate speech. You can't say anything that contradicts whatever the narrative is. And by the way, Vox Day is a native of Minnesota who attended Bucknell University, which is a fairly elite school in Pennsylvania.
So, yep.
Anyways, but that's that was sort of a detour there.
Yeah. Yep.
On the road. And so, but yes, they, you know, the monopoly power of these large companies and the fact that SJWs are now running everything, you know, is that these companies, yesterday, my brother and I went out to have a sandwich at this place, and the sports is on the TV. They got sports on all the TVs. And we were watching a golf tournament, a Hawaii golf. It was being played in Hawaii. And they showed this guy, what?
You actually watch golf?
Well, it is slightly more exciting than paint drying.
Well, it was TV, and it was just, you know, there's not a lot of sports going on right now, Diana. I don't know if you noticed, but anyways, but I just happened to be watching, this was the nearest TV screen, and so I was watching this golf tournament, and they talked about this certain player who had lost the sponsorship because of a homophobic slur he had said. Well, and I'm like, what? And so I whip my phone out and I Google, and it turns out that this golfer had a 5-foot putt for par, right? Okay, you're right. He's a professional golfer. Okay, he missed the 5-foot putt for par. And he yelled out and it was caught on camera. He yelled out, "Faggot." Now, I can think of a lot of things that I would yell when I'm frustrated that I wouldn't want captured on national TV. Yeah. Faggot is not one of them. But the idea that the word faggot, and I was reading this news account where they wouldn't even say the word, but it said it was considered grossly offensive, a slur against. I don't know, but I played, when I was playing youth football, I mean, faggot was just, what they called you when you weren't running hard enough,
Stacy, did you ever hear a recording of a song called Money for Nothing?
Oh, right.
Got his own airplane.
Got his own. And by the way, and I was thinking about this last night,
Look at them yo-yos.
Yeah, look at
this. Is yo-yos offensive?
Or banging on the bongos like a chimpanzee.
Oh, that ain't working.
No, that ain't working. But the thing is that look at that faggot with his earring and his makeup. Yeah, buddy, that's his own hair. Little faggot with got his own jet airplane. Little faggot is a millionaire. And notice the diminutive little there.
Yeah.
Okay. This is because where I come from.
But can you imagine Sting performing that live now?
Right. In the time and place that I. Yeah. In the time
actually, and place, I can imagine Knopfler doing it, not Sting, mm-hmm. though.
In the time and place that I grew up, mm-hmm. the word was an insult, okay, a challenge, okay. It was always the little guy, and I was small as a kid, who was getting called this and it was just a taunt, an insult. Mm-hmm. It's like a someone trying to start a fight. Okay, and so the idea that I was, as a young man, somehow a victim of homophobia, and stuff like that, it's crazy.
Okay? Well, yes, it is crazy.
Not with your flowing blonde locks, my dear.
No. But just this business of people, your hurt feelings make you a victim of a hate crime.
I'm sorry, but your feels don't change the facts. And the fact is,
it's a stupid word, okay? It's a stupid word.
But the fact
Who
is
cares?
That.
Who cares?
Yeah, but the fact is, Parlay is pushing back. They're suing Amazon Web Services, alleging a violation of, and this is somebody finally getting it right, I think, the Sherman Antitrust Act. And also breach of contract and tortious interference with business. I'm not a lawyer, but it strikes me that that's exactly the approach that someone needs to take. Mm-hmm. Basically, what they're alleging on the antitrust violation is that Amazon Services had a deal with a Parlay, and then they signed Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they are taking actions that are good for Twitter and bad for Parlay. Well, who's the bigger customer? And so they're, it looks like they did in fact breach the contract. And obviously there's torturous interference with business opportunities. For example, they've interfered with my contract that I have had with Parlay. Parlay about what they were going to provide for me.
Class action.
Yeah, that would be some interesting thing to add on top. Although, my actual damages aren't so much. On the other hand, there's some real monetary damages to Parlay. Mm-hmm. And of course, they get treble damages if they're successful under the Antitrust Act. Mm-hmm. So, this is the way to do it. I mean, this is the way to hurt businesses doing this sort of stuff is to kill them in the marketplace or to kill them with a liability in the courts. Mm-hmm. And what is 50 some odd billion dollars in market capitalization gone over the last week or so from Twitter and Facebook.
Yes.
You know,
and it's going to be more as more and more of us say, you know, more and more of us say, you know what? A friend of mine has been restricted. Actually, two of my friends, and I'm sorry, these are not strong, offensive people, have been restricted. More and more of us are going to say that's nonsense and move elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, and meanwhile,
we won't be buying, we won't be clicking those ads, will we?
No. Well, I don't click the ads anyway. But the only reason I got on Twitter, and I occasionally engage in a back and forth with people on Twitter, just it's something to do when I'm bored. But the reason I got on Twitter was because I was promoting my blog posts that way. And when the right people were on Twitter retweeting that or linking back to me, it was very beneficial. Glenn Reynolds picking up stuff because he, saw a tweet and then a link to my post. I mean, Glenn was driving someplace between a third and half my traffic when that was going on. That was worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter because I particularly like it. I had a post, though, this week. One of my I'm not making this up, you know, posts. This is from the 12th. And believe it or not, there's a pinned tweet at Twitter Public Policy, which is at policy if you want to go there. And it says, protecting the hashtag open internet is a key objective for Twitter. It's why we exist. There are two key areas to consider. Avoid entrenching the dominance of the biggest players by protecting competition, and two, focused on content, how content is discovered, amplified, less on removal alone. You know, it's like, okay, and then that I got to that because I went to look at their policy page because of this absurd tweet they had complaining that Uganda was censoring social media. It's like self-awareness alert.
Yeah. And they seem, you know, it is this, I've always noticed that, you know, people on the left suffer, and you see that, you would see this all the time, by the way, around the era of Gamergate, and some of the characters that were over there on the feminist side and stuff like that, they seem to have no self-awareness, and they would say things that, you know, attacking others that could just as well describe themselves.
You know, I happened to watch Scott Adams' feed on YouTube this morning. He's on YouTube now because he's been bounced from Periscope. He was talking about, you know, when he wants to see what the left is saying, he turns on CNN because that's kind of the average, this is what the left is doing right now. He watches CNN. But he said yesterday he wanted to find out what the crazies were doing. So he turned on MSNBC. And he said he was absolutely beyond shocked. He was almost frightened by what he was hearing, because what these people were carrying on as if it were normal conversation was so beyond the pale in terms of just normal civic behavior that, he found it very alarming. It apparently had been a while since he
should
watched MSNBC. You know, where their Overton window is like, it is in fact right.
They keep saying things, stating them as facts, right?
They're absolutely hallucinatory.
Yeah, that this was an insurrection. They just state flatly that Trump incited a riot.
Well, look at the post you'd put up that just this afternoon late about Che Guevara and the interview that she did with MSNBC.
Okay, Democrats and the media, but I repeat myself, are trying to destroy America. This is the title of the post, and if you happen to be listening to the podcast live, then this is actually at the top of the page, even as I speak. And I have a screen cap, by the way, of the Breitbart.com article that I quote later in the post, but I begin by quoting something that Ace of Spades linked this week. It's an essay by Alana Newhouse at Tablet.
Before you get started on that, let me just make one thing comment about the headline there. You know, it's occasional cortex saying, I was not safe in a secure location with health Republicans. They sympathize with the white supremacist cause.
I told you this is the escalation, and it's completely without evidence. They're just repeating it and repeating it and repeating
Stacey,
it.
I'll get there.
Stacey,
sorry.
Who founded Stop the Steal?
Right. We had. Give me a hint. It's not a white person.
Okay? Well, he's half African American, half Arab.
Yeah.
And okay, so, and he would be a great stunt double for Sammy Davis Jr.
Right, and so this idea, and by the way, he's in hiding.
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody can get to him right now. I'm sure that the NSA is aware of his location, but that's how that goes. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, I quote Ace of Spades linking, Ace of Spades is linking Alana Newhouse, and so here's her quote. Starting in the second decade of the 1900s, certain communists began seeing in modernism a potential advertisement for the values of a mass society of industrial workers laboring under the direction of a small group of engineers. In other words, this aesthetic, which whole swaths of the Western world were already in the process of quickly adopting, could also be the perfect delivery mechanism for their, the communist, political ideology. 100 years later, we find ourselves in the middle of a similar cultural and political struggle. Now, what Alana Newhouse is talking about here is how the ideal of flatness, conformity, homogeneity, the destruction of individualism, and the end of actual diversity has been advanced by internet technology, okay? And we were talking about how, you know, if you're not, you know, if you cause trouble for the regime, you're gonna be deplatformed, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay. They will turn you into Emmanuel Goldstein.
Or Winston Smith. We must now
implement
whatever beliefs the party requires or be destroyed. Dissent against the party is treason. We are all Winston Smith in room 101, expected to agree that 2 + 2 = 5 if that's what the party decides.
Or 81,281,502.
Mm-hmm. This is about power. And those who wield power on behalf of the party, and I use capitalized party there, which people will recognize who read 1984. But in people who wield power on behalf of the party, the 20-something SJWs in charge of fact checks for the media and safety for social media platforms will target you as an enemy if you question their authority to decide what is true. So now, having with that set up, I explain this is why the phrase white supremacy is being slung around so promiscuously by Democrats and their media allies as if anyone who didn't vote for Joe Biden is a violent neo-Nazi skinhead. And now the news from Breitbart. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, D. New York, said Friday on MSNBC's The Rachel Maddow Show that she could not stay in the secure location with Republican members of Congress during the Capitol Hill riot because they sympathize with the white supremacist cause. And she actually said in the space of like 10 seconds, Ocasio-Cortez used the phrase white supremacist three times. And this idea of repetition, okay?
And say it three times and it's true.
If you are one of the...
It's true.
If
with
you
the
are,
haunting of the snark.
Mm-hmm.
If you are one of the 74 million Americans who voted to reelect President Trump, AOC is calling you a white supremacist. By this, she means you are a potential terrorist. Every Republican voter should be fired from their job and sent to prison. That is what AOC and Democrats have in mind. There will be no liberty, no First Amendment protection of free speech, no right to dissent.
But they'll send our kids to a re-education camp.
In the one-party regime that Democrats are preparing to implement, Joe Biden and the Democrats have in mind nothing less than the destruction of America as we know it.
And you know what? I want to get back to the fact that I have a conservative friend who was involved in founding the Stop the Steal movement. And while I don't agree with everything about Stop the Steal and everything that my friend did, I still respect him, and I still believe that he acted in good faith for good reasons.
Well,
but you know what?
Organize a rally and some people get out of hand.
Right.
I don't know.
But the point is that I also have a good friend. Take David French, for example. Okay. Now you may not agree.
Will not take David French. You can take him.
Well, okay.
I've known him a long time.
Right. I can tell you right now that we have real disagreements about public policy. I can also tell you that we have some things in common, and that while I disagree with him, I have personal respect for him. And the point is that both Ali and David French are conservatives, and neither one of them are in favor of what Biden's administration is about to lay on the country. And what bothers me is that we can't have more cooperation on things that are for the common good. And that I have a post, actually, it's not politically focused. It's about Christians getting into it with each other. But I'm called
eschatology.
It's about eschatology. The post is called Minding My Own Business. And I'll just refer the listeners to that. I think it's probably worth their time to see that because, you know, whether it's in matters of religion or matters of culture or matters of politics, there's something to be said for being allied with your allies. So I'll just leave it at that. On the other hand, there's some alleged conservatives that I don't have respect for. The Lincoln Project comes to mind.
Yeah, by the way,
and that gets us to the crazy people.
Yeah. By the way, you didn't see my post earlier today, I don't think. John Weaver has come out to say he's basically taken the Kevin Casey defense.
Crazy people are dangerous. And this is an example of someone being a danger to himself and to others, and including the people around him and the organizations around him.
Okay, the right-hand man for the John McCain presidential campaign, and also a top aide strategist, is what he is, a strategist that, who worked in the John Kasich presidential campaign in 2016, a co-founder of the Lincoln Project, the Rhino Backstabber. Anyways, I had a post called "Far Be It From Me to Repeat Salacious Gossip About Rhino Backstabbers, But." This was the thing. It turns out, and we have now, it has more or less been confirmed, I guess, that John Weaver, the political consultant who was getting rich off of the Lincoln Project, John Weaver has been soliciting sexual favors from young men. John Weaver is 60, he's my age. That's how old he is. He's in his 60s. And he's married with two children, married to a woman, actually, with two children. But anyways, he has been soliciting. He's having inappropriate sexual conversations with young men in direct messages online, grooming them by promising lucrative career opportunities in exchange for sex. And by the way, and I'm quoting a story here, this is not me saying this, dozens of young men have come forward with accusations.
And that we're talking Weaver, lots.
Yeah, it was apparently more or less routine. Any young man who was trying to get into Republican campaign operations was solicited. Oh, by the way, he emailed an unsolicited photo of his penis in at least one incident. And I'm thinking that if you've got a digital photo of your penis on your laptop or whatever, that you probably sent that around to more than one people.
You may already be a wiener.
Yeah. Anyways, and so I right now the Steve Schmitz of the Lincoln Project is desperately trying to pretend that this never happened. If you are still on Twitter and have access to it,
now people are going to try to wonder, why did I pick this for Crazy People Are Dangerous? And a lot of people are thinking about crazy people in the terms of people who are psychotic and that sort of stuff. But clearly, this guy has what's called an axis to problem. He has real behavioral issues.
Yeah.
And, whether it's caused by an axis one, which is like alcohol problems, like alcoholism or something like that, or axis three, which is actual a medical problem, doesn't have to be. This guy has got real behavioral issues, and it's dangerous. It's just flat out dangerous.
Well, let me
tell
you.
Wrong and wicked, anyway.
That's one of the dangers.
This week, I texted a message to my young sons, telling them, as I have told them before, never put anything into a DM, an email, or a text message saying anything you wouldn't want to see on the front page of the New York Times.
But well, you know what we have to have on our back?
Read.
What we have to have on our back. Green. Yes.
7 o'clock next Saturday night, and we're out of here.
Yes. Good night, folks.
We are.
Good night. Yes. Good night.